It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports, The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Now, on this morning's show, I want to do a deeper and sort of a long-range look at how high school and college sports have been, well, totally upended over the last couple of years in ways we can still only imagine. And I'm talking about two monumental shifts in amateur sports: the impact of name, image, likeness, and allowing athletes to quite literally cash in on financial deals that have the potential to make them wealthy even before they play one play in college. And right beside NIL is the impact of the open transfer portal, which allows college student athletes to basically jump from one college to another without having to sit out a traditional year. That is, they can play for a different college and a different coach just as soon as they transfer in. Now, for most of us, these two changes are still somewhat hard to comprehend, particularly for somebody like myself who grew up in a world where there was a real, real wall between money, college athletes, and what you could earn. But the simple truth is the impact of these sea changes is still playing out and will continue to play out for many years to come. And I want to get into this today. Now, later on in the hour, if I have time, I also want to give you the latest chapter in the ongoing Sports Edge police blotter, and also share with you an important insight into sports psychology that, well, quite frankly, all athletes need to focus on and to develop on their own. The question really is, at what age should a young athlete start to practice this key aspect of sports psychology? But first up, well, we all know that the old and traditional rules of the NCAA were pretty much blown up and tossed aside in the last couple of years. The impact of NIL and the transfer portal, both of which were impossible to assume would ever take place, well, they have indeed landed and have changed amateur sports forever. So what the question is not whether these changes will take place. They have. There's no need to debate whether they are good or bad. The question now shifts to what kind of impact these changes are going to have. High school and college athletes can now legally generate lots of money from endorsements, and college athletes can jump from one school to another without having to sit out a year. So what happens next? Well, for starters, I do see and recognize that we have much more parity in terms of talent among college teams than ever before. And that I totally attribute to the fact that there were literally thousands of college athletes transferring all over. And that has the effect of leveling the playing field across the board. And I also see where college and high school athletes, at least some of them, are now beginning to rake in all sorts of huge paydays. In short, my friends, we are once again clearly in the wild, wild west. The question is, what happens next? So, when I come back after the break, I'm going to talk with ESPN's Noah Savage, who is well-versed in all of this and has made it clear on the Sports Edge in the past that he is very much in favor of what's been going on. So I'm eager to get Noah's perspective on all of this and where do we go from here. I'll be back with Noah right after this timeout.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots
of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the Free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on the Sports Edge, let me introduce my guest, and obviously I'm very close to Noah, as you'll find out in a second. Noah is a broadcaster who covers college basketball for ESPN, ESPN Plus, and the Ivy League Network. And for the past decade, Noah has been covering Princeton men's basketball as their color commentator on their broadcasts. In addition, you should know that he's performed stand-up comedy in the New York City area for the past 8 years, and he's performed all around New York City as at the New York Fringe Festival and the Brooklyn Comedy Festival. He runs a show called Savage Von Wolf with his much funnier and prettier wife, Alyssa. As a player himself, Noah was Princeton's captain, an all-Ivy League performer, graduated in the top 10 in career three-pointers made in Princeton history. He also played a year professionally in Switzerland during the 2009 season. And by the way, friends, just in terms of journalistic integrity, I need to point out that Noah is indeed married to my daughter, Alyssa, and yes, he is my son-in-law. Okay, Noah, thank you for getting up and talking with me this morning about this this unbelievable impact, the sea change in terms of what's happening. Now, from what I see every day, there are all sorts of financial endorsements that college and even high school athletes are now signing, not just for walk-around money, but for big money, money that's guaranteed if these athletes do some perhaps autograph signings or perhaps post some tweets about the sponsor, or just let the world know that they love and embrace a sponsor's product or service. And this money goes right to the athlete's pocket. It does not go to the college. It has no impact on the kid's athletic scholarship. It's just a big payday for the athlete who's already, if they play at a major D1 program, they're already getting free tuition, room and board. So this is just, again, it's a situation. And of course, nobody is complaining because it just seems that money is raining down from the sky. Noah, do you agree with that?
Yeah, on the coaches? Yeah, this is a long time coming, Rick, and this is something that athletes have known for a long time, which is that these coaches are walking around $10 million deal with Dabo Swinney, a $50 million deal, Coach Calipari, and this really, it strikes to the heart of what college athletics really are, which is from a business standpoint, they're the greatest content marketing campaign of all time, okay? They are the greatest content marketing campaign of all time. And for the, older listeners or people don't know what content marketing is you make something, people watch it, and then advertisers flock to the eyeballs. Now, that could be college football or college basketball, or you can make a TikTok video where you, shoot a firecracker in the air and it goes viral. So, finally, there's been some level of sanity where, I feel bad for guys like Johnny Football or Zion Williamson or the guys who were transcended stars in the past who should have got $5 to $10 million from Nike because they were the face of every broadcast for the entire season. So one thing to point out is that, yeah, this money seems big, like an $800,000 deal for 2 years for a Miami guard reported. But when you compare it to the $6 billion that the NCAA got for the broadcast rights, it's still kind of peanuts.
Okay, well, I want to focus primarily today, and I'm not disagreeing with you, because obviously the big-time college coaches do rake in millions and millions and millions of dollars. It's all guaranteed, and if things don't work out, they get a severance package, which also usually runs into the millions of dollars. I'm talking, of course, today about the athletes, and I know, and we'll get into this. I know you have your own history, and you've asked, you basically have been asking for years, how is this fair? How is it equitable that the universities are making big bucks off the TV contracts, the coaches are getting big bucks, but the players, yes, they may get scholarship money, but the fact is they're not seeing anything beyond that. I hear you on this. I got to tell you, I did a little research, obviously, to see some of the more unusual deals that are, quite frankly, I think they're creative. And maybe that's a good thing in terms of some of these college student-athletes. For example, I'll go through half a dozen here. There's a wide receiver at the University of Nebraska. His name is DeColdest Crawford. That's his first name, D. Coldest. Mm-hmm. Now, he recently inked an NIE deal with a local HVAC company, SOS Heating and Cooling.
Mm.
Now, you couldn't think of a better deal for this kid because, after all, his name is D. Coldest. And he is the coldest. He's playing in Nebraska. So he went out and cut a deal. I guess things are working out quite well. He's getting paid because of his name. Number two. One of the nation's top running backs is a fellow named Bijan Robinson at the University of Texas. Well, he wanted to get some sort of unique NIL deal. And, you know, in Texas, they do things in a big, big way. So he decided, I'm going to go out and see if I can cut a deal with a car dealer. No, but he didn't go to like a Ford or a Chrysler. He cut a deal, an NIE deal, with the local dealership that handles Lamborghinis. So he's now driving around campus and going to the home games in his Lamborghini. Pretty impressive. Raekwon Smith has evolved from being a Norfolk State running back to the basically he presents himself as being the king of NIL. This guy Smith. He's going to be a senior. He's a senior now at Norfolk State, and he has now put together 70 NIL deals. He stopped playing football as a running back, and now he's going to be a decathlete for the track and field team. And he's also basically teaching other student athletes how to, you know, make sure they can cash in on NIL as well. I mean, it goes on. Now, here's what I have to ask you about, because I still can't believe this, Noah. There's a top quarterback out of California. Kid named Jaden Rashada. The reports I'm reading is that he got into a bidding war between going to the University of Florida, because apparently he's a top quarterback, and the University of Miami. And the rumor is that he has signed a deal with a Miami Hurricanes booster that's going to pay him $9.5 million.
That's great. Fantastic.
I'm not disputing that. It's like the kid won the lottery. I mean, as I said, it's just sort of raining money from out of the sky. I mean, this is unbelievable.
And right. When you go to a game and you see a celebrity coach and the quarterback stinks.
Yep.
Do you have a good time? You like watching your team with a bad quarterback, or do the players actually matter? And I think that
if you're paying a coach, you know, several million dollars a year to coach your college team, isn't it sort of incumbent and expected he's going to bring in some top quarterbacks or top running backs or top linebackers?
Oh, 100%. And what everyone needs to start thinking about college sports as is think of it as entertainment. Think about if you ran a multi-million dollar movie studio on Ohio State's campus.
Yep.
And some students went down every day and they made movies. And then people watch the movies, millions of people watch the movies. And then the old way was, and all right, you get tuition. But now it's become so ridiculous that this had to change. And they're still not pay for play, technically. But what they've done is they've created collectives on these campuses. So basically, it's a group of boosters paying a student athlete or a group of student athletes. It's somehow kind of getting around the pay for play. But, you know, the next step is there's going to be collective bargaining, and they're just going to pay the players.
Well, one of the examples, glad you brought about the collectives, because they are sort of grouped together by the alumni, Texas Tech football. They found a way this year to basically put together a collective nonprofit, which basically guarantees every member of the Texas Tech football team they get a base salary, for lack of a better term, of $25,000 next year. Now, what these Texas Tech alums did, this booster club, they put this thing together so that, A, they felt it was imperative so that Texas Tech could compete against all the other major D1 football programs. But the kicker on this, which I thought was kind of interesting and kind of, you know, I thought a good idea, what these kids have to do to earn their $25,000 is they have to agree to go out and do community service and work basically as representative for charities in the West Texas area. That's a nice gesture. I mean, because maybe that will have some positive impact in the Texas Tech following. But again,
yeah, it's a win-win.
Huh?
It's a win-win.
Yeah, I was going to say. So it'd be great if more and more colleges did this. I don't know if they will or not. And I just also want to point out, we've talked mostly about male athletes here. we can't overlook the fact that the sisters, Hannah and Haley Cavender, who've been star basketball players at Fresno State and just transferred to the University of Miami, they were big stars on social media, and now they're doing deals with like Boost Mobile and Six Star Pro Nutrition. But they make their money not necessarily from the college where they go, but because they can earn money from endorsements and, of course, from social media. I mean, I don't have to lecture you. You know this. I mean, they're like a huge entity on social media. They have something like 7 million followers on TikTok and Instagram. And that just generates other advertisers who want to basically tap in and get their blessing for their endorsement. So go ahead.
You hit on a great point, Rick, which is that so before NIL, let's say that these sisters had a huge social media following.
Right.
Right? But they happen to be athletes. They wouldn't be allowed to accept any money from that social media following.
Yep.
So in a way, they were putting athletes, you know, 3 years ago at a disadvantage to the quote-unquote normal student. And one of the main goals of the NCAA, which is an absolutely asinine and ridiculous goal, is to make they want student-athletes to quote-unquote basically have the same experience as non-athlete students, right? So it would be a violation back in the day. You go to the deli and you get an extra slice of turkey or I give you a free Coke. That's a violation back in the day. So we knew, like, think about even the Lamborghini that Bijan Robinson is driving around.
Yep.
Back in the day, there were multiple reports of wide receivers and running backs driving luxury cars, but now it's above board and now it's okay. So, this is all positive and this is all basically trying to get some sanity. And for women athletes, this is fantastic because you might follow someone because they're on TikTok and Instagram, and then you might actually go, wow, maybe I'll turn on the game and watch some of these great student athletes, whether playing volleyball, softball, basketball. But it's a positive across the board. And what's amazing about it is that this solution has been there for a long time.
Well,
it's the same model as Olympic athletes.
Yes.
Going back to put the dream team on the Wheaties box, right? You're not getting paid to play, but you know what? You're going to get a Visa ad and you're going to get a Wheaties ad and a Nike ad. And it's been an easy solution. And the only reason it hasn't existed before is because of the greed of the NCAA. And it took a court decision to basically force their hand to, quote-unquote, allow this to happen.
Well, we're talking with Noah Savage of ESPN, and he just gave us a pretty good overview of the history and how we've gotten to this point, Noah, and I agree with you. I mean, if you go back to the days, over 100 years ago, of Jim Thorpe being disqualified from the Olympic Games and having to give back his gold medals because of the fact that it came up that he'd been playing and got paid semi-pro baseball. I mean, this is just... we've come so far from those days.
Hey, give Reggie Bush back his Heisman, right?
Oh, Reggie
like,
Bush?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Give it back to him.
The last few years, before all this stuff came legal, I mean, there were college athletes, not necessarily household names as perhaps in track and field or running at smaller colleges, but the fact is these were athletes who were making so much money on social media as influencers, that they had to make a decision, well, do I keep competing for my college, which doesn't generate me any money whatsoever, because if I stay with my social media outlets and Twitter and Instagram, I'm making millions. So it was like a no-brainer. Obviously, they're going to go where the money is. And now, of course, a few years later, these athletes could be still competing, still playing sports in college, but also making their money, having their cake, and quite literally eating it as well. There's an article last week, a few months ago, Nick Saban of Alabama, the football coach, and Jimbo Fisher of Texas A&M, they were quoted as saying that there really is a need to make all of these NIL deals to be very transparent and upfront. Why did they say that? Because they didn't want any other colleges who they compete against to get a leg up on all the others in the recruiting sweepstakes. But according to ESPN, which actually then followed up on this, very few colleges are actually revealing the key details on these NIL deals. They're saying, well, we'll show you that we'll give you some broad numbers, but we're not going to tell you who the athletes are. We're not going to tell you how much money they're getting or who the sponsors are. Now, Is that fair? And obviously, I know what you're going to say about this. Can we expect the NCAA to intervene and control this? Obviously, no. They're not. They're no longer. Chance. They're pretty much toast at this juncture.
The other thing, Rick, is think about anybody who works at a company that has full comp transparency. Yep. I think it's very rare, right? If you ever find out someone you work with makes a little bit more than you for the same job, or you know, makes a lot more than you for the same job, guess what that does to you as a fully grown adult in your 40s or 50s? Now picture that you are, you know, like the guy from Miami, Isaiah Wong. He finds out that there's a transfer coming in getting $800,000, yep. And he says, no, I'm out of here. I'm putting my name in the transfer portal. So the transparency of this is going to be fought mainly by the schools, Rick.
Well,
because if they let people know, if they let the athletes on their own team know, here's what this guy's making or that guy's making, that's not going to make people very happy. And number two, they don't want to just create, like it's already a monster that's growing and growing and growing.
Yes.
But if there was full transparency, it would just go astronomical in terms of, oh, well, you're offering 10 mil over here. We're going to get 12. How about 20? How about 30? And then eventually it's just going to become fully pro sports with a salary cap. That's where we're headed over the next 10 years.
Yeah, and I want to come to that later on in the hour with you. But to your point, I mean, if I'm looking at this article about Coach Saban and Coach Fisher saying they want transparency and we have to reveal the numbers, I'm thinking these guys haven't, and they're making millions and millions of dollars on their football salaries, but they haven't thought this through for exactly the point you just said, that all of a sudden big star athlete comes in and is, you know, very happy with the deal he got, you know, in terms of NIL money from that as he or she attends that college. But when they find out somebody on their teammates is making more, well, what are you going to do about it, coach? Well, I'm sorry, but you already signed the deal, and we can't go back and renegotiate. Well, you tell you what, I'm going to transfer someplace else where they're going to pay me more. And I think, as you said, this is what's going to happen. And I can understand the frustration and the difficulty that coaches have to deal with this, but in effect, they sort of, in effect, created this problem with their own major salaries.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're going to lead me there in the next segment, but one of the big changes that we've seen because of NIL and the transfer portal is that I think programs, in the traditional sense, really don't exist as a four-year program anymore. Yeah. Every team is a one-year team.
Yep.
Because if you're at the low major level and your players are playing well, they're gone. And if you're at the high major level, they still might be gone. I mean, what amazes me is you've got guys like Remy Martin, all Pac-12, and he transfers to Kansas. And guess what? He ends up winning a national championship, so you can't fault him for it. But what's amazing to me is that even at a blue-chip, top-of-the-line program, you're still not safe, even if a guy is playing every minute and getting every shot.
Yeah, I think that's, and again, that's the hardcore reality. You know, and I talk about transferring, and we come up on a break in a minute here, but I always come back to this amazing story. This quarterback, Quinn Ewers, he grew up and was a star quarterback in Texas. And he was offered a $1.4 million NIL deal when he was about ready to go to college. But it turns out that at that time, just a couple of years ago, Texas did not allow NIL deals. So the kid decided, okay, no problem, I'll go to Ohio State. Well, he goes to Ohio State as a freshman, and he's getting his $1.4 million, but he doesn't play more than three or four plays the entire season because they have C.J. Stroud, the outstanding quarterback at Ohio State. So what did Ewers do? He transfers back to Texas because now they've changed the laws there, and now he's a rising star in the Texas team. He still got his NIL money last year at Ohio State, not doing much, but now he's going to be a star. And then keep in mind, looking ahead, Arch Manning, the most heralded high school quarterback of the year, he's going to Texas next year. So it's, you know, this is high finance as to who's going to get what and who's going to play and so on and so forth. It is really fascinating stuff. All right. Let me take a pause here. We're talking about the impact, taking a long-range view of what's going to happen with NIL and college sports, college athletes, and we'll talk about the transfer portal and how it plays a key role in this as well. We're talking with Noah Savage of ESPN. We'll take a timeout and come back. Stay with me. Hey, welcome back to the Sports Edge, everyone. I'm talking this morning with Noah Savage, who covers college basketball on ESPN. But before I return to our conversation with Noah, I did promise you at the start of the show the latest entry from the Sports Edge police blotter. And this one comes from the city of Boston, where a well-respected and veteran Catholic high school football coach suddenly quit his job after having to endure abusive and vulgar parents on the sideline after a game. Quote, "The joy of coaching kind of gets ripped away from you," said Con Chase, the former head coach of Cardinal Spellman High School in Brockton. "It's just nonstop, whether it's the plays that stink or I don't have the team ready to play. They're just constantly yelling at us." Now, Chase, whose team had a 3-3 record this season, he just said, "It's just the general vulgar behavior that keep coming from the parents." In fact, last year we had a parent follow one of our assistant coaches out of the coaching booth. Now, Coach Chase, who has coached Spellman for the last two of his career 19 seasons, he called it quits, as I said last week, after a loss to Bishop Fenwick High School, Peabody. But, you know, this is not the first time that we've seen this happen, where a serious and well-respected high school coach has just, well, quite frankly, gotten fed up and walked out the door. You remember we talked to Chris de Blasio out of Saddlebrook High School boys basketball? Well, he quit his job earlier this season, this past year, when he was being accosted by angry sports dads. So I got to tell you, in this day and age of mental health and our coaches, don't be surprised if we see this kind of nonsense happening even more, where the parents basically just use their verbal abuse to drive good quality coaches out of their jobs. Okay, we're talking with Noah Savage. We're talking about NIL and the transfer portal. Noah, we just talked in the first part of the show about all these amazing deals. This is not just, as I said, you know, pin money for kids in college, make a few extra bucks. This is hundreds of thousands, in some cases, millions of dollars. Has nothing to do with how well they play. It just has to do with the fact that they're lending their name to these major sponsors. I have to assume that because all this is tied together, the transfer portal, NIL, and obviously college athletes talk to each other all the time, There's going to be a situation here where we're going to see a real direct impact, and maybe we already are, when it comes to kids jumping from one college to another because they're unhappy either with the coach or their playing time, or they feel they can get more money someplace else. You're involved in this. I mean, in the sense that you cover college basketball. What are you seeing and what are you hearing?
Well, number one, it's making my job harder, right? Because you get to know a kid and you go, wait, what the hell? He's on his other team now. And if you think about just in major high-level, blue-chip programs, Oscar Tshiebwe, Kentucky's best player, player of the year.
Yep.
He's a transfer from West Virginia.
Yep.
The Brady Manick transferred from Oklahoma to North Carolina. He's an impact player. Remy Martin, ACC player of the year, Alondis Williams. So it's not just guys who are role players or disgruntled, but you know, it impacts every level, and there's teams in low D1, you know, bottom 100 type programs where if they have a good year, they'll lose all of their team. And I'm not exaggerating. They'll lose the whole roster. So I spoke with a coach, and he says, number one, we have to recruit our own team. So you literally have to recruit the players you've already recruited to stay with the program, number one. Number two is, at the high major level, the guys who are promised shots and playing time, they're gone in a second.
I'm listening to this, and as you just said, what really sort of stuck with me is the fact that the college coaches, particularly, you know, I mean, the high-powered programs, and even the ones that are less high-powered, the coach has to first bring the kids in, and then he's got to make sure, or she has to make sure they stay there. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And let's be clear about what the portal is, Rick, because a lot of people say, well, transfers always existed, right? But the difference is that to make it easier for the student-athlete to transfer, they created a portal. You think you might want to transfer. You pop your name in. It takes 2 seconds. And then all of a sudden, you're getting interest, right?
Yep, yep.
So it's the difference between back in the 90s, you had to order a pizza, right? You go, I got to pick up the phone. I got to find the cat. Maybe I won't. Now I go on my phone, beep, beep, beep. The pizza's at my door, right?
Yep.
the baby, you order pizza a little more often, right? So if you're a disgruntled player and you got your smartphone, which, by the way, are ruining the world, you go on your phone, you're a little bit ticked off after practice, boom, you're in the transfer portal in under 2 minutes. And all of a sudden, Kansas wants you, and Miami, and oh my God, and you're only playing at Delaware, and oh, I can't believe I'm getting interest from Virginia Tech or whatever it is. So what's happened is by trying to empower the student athletes with this portal, I mean, it's created an absolute hellscape for coaches, because why would you recruit a high school kid, Rick, when you can recruit a college-ready player out of the portal? And there were 1,500 players in the portal last year.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I agree with you. When I coached college baseball, again, you know, 100 years ago, but you always said to yourself, well, there are really proven quality kids coming out of junior college, and they have two more years or a year or more of maturity. Why wouldn't I go with a JUCO transfer as opposed to a kid coming out of high school? Because it's just they're more proven. And it's the same kind of philosophy that you're talking about now. Why would a college coach take a chance on a high school kid when they can take a chance on a kid, A, who's played somewhere else at a D1 program, or has been a top performer somewhere else in college at a D2, even a mm-hmm. D3 level? I mean, it's
yeah, and from an talent evaluation standpoint, it's really hard to tell from an AAU game or a high school game how good a kid is, right? He could have 30 points, but even for college coaches, they miss a lot on recruits. But if you go low D1 and you get 20 a game, guess what? That three-point line's the same distance. That hoop is the same height. And now you've proven that you can score and you can shoot, and you're going to be a hot commodity, you know, nationally. And at the low major level, I had a coach tell me that he doesn't recruit high school kids because he goes, I'm not trying to develop them and get them ready to transfer to UConn. That's word for word what he said, because he knows he's good at skill development. They'll be here 2 years, and then they'll be gone. So he goes, I'll take a kid from a JUCO, bring him here. He's happy to be playing D1 basketball, and I get 2 good years out of him.
What about, and again, this is just speculative, but this sort of lends me to the story you just told about the coach and saying, I don't want to bring a kid here who's just going to transfer to UConn after being a year here in my program. Do we find that there are college coaches that basically sort of surreptitiously go out and put their feelers to kids at other programs and say, you know, I realize you're not in the transfer portal, but I've seen some video of you. If you ever thought about transferring, we'd be interested in you here at State. I mean, does that happen?
Yeah. Well, if you can think of it, they're doing it, number one.
Okay.
They're doing anything under the sun because, really, it's become the Wild West, right?
Yes.
Transfer isn't – it used to be the biggest reason why kids didn't used to transfer. There's two reasons. One, you had to sit a year.
Yes.
So now you don't have to sit a year, your first transfer. You get one freebie where you can transfer and play right away.
Right.
The second reason is that it was looked down upon. It was like, wait, you're transferring. You must be the problem.
Yes,
the kid must be the problem.
Which, that is correct.
I don't know how often that happens anymore, Rick. It was the Scarlet Little. You're damaged. You're transferring. Why would you transfer from a great program? I'm not kidding.
I mean, I hear you in that. I think that's exactly right. There was a stigma, you know, not that long ago, and for 100 years that, well, if you transferred out of a program, the general perception was, well, the problem is not the coach or the university. It must be you. You must be a difficult teammate or selfish or self-centered or have some sort of issues, because nobody transfers, because who wants to sit an entire year and not play? Nowadays, it's totally reversed. It's now a 180 situation where kids are saying, well, either I'm not happy where I am, but I remember back out of high school, this other college coach really wanted me to go to his program, so I think I'm going to transfer. Or the kids hear from his, from playing ball, that what other guys are making in terms of NIL money, and that my particular university, they don't have those kind of situations. I'm not making any money on the side while I'm playing ball here. There's a lot of reasons for any young, enterprising young person to say, maybe the time has come to me at least to explore what's out there. And as you said, if we're talking about it, yes, I am sure this is happening all over the country with, colleges everywhere. Let me ask you this. Do college coaches, do they have traditionally somebody on their, and this maybe sounds like a naive question, I don't mean it that way, do they now have people on their staff who are their job is to basically scour the transfer portal or look at video from kids from other schools and
100%.
So
100%, but I would say it's probably not only one, it's probably part of every assistant coach's job. But I'm sure there's at least one that's saying, you're the transfer portal guy and you got to know what's going on. Because like we said, they're ready-made products. But one thing I want to point out, Rick, is that we are saying, oh, this is so hard for the coaches, it's become really hard to recruit, and it has. But I think that two other areas that are hurt are the high school kid, because if you're a good high school player, it actually hurts the recruiting because they're recruiting their transfers first before they even get to you, number one. But it helps the player that's in a situation that, guess what, sometimes the coach is actually wrong. So when the coach is wrong about you and you say, I think I'm a better player than this, you actually have recourse and have somewhere to go and get some more playing time. And the other thing is, they used to just recruit you, wine you, dine you, show you a great time, and then the second you get on campus, all they do is yell at you, treat you like garbage, and stick you on the bench, right?
Yep.
So now this has forced coaches to actually create cultures where the main reason why you're not going to leave is because, guess what, it's too fun to be here. So it's actually created a situation where coaches have to change the way they coach, and I don't think that's all bad. I think that's a good thing for players.
Let's talk about high school athletes because, you know, back in the day, again, we're talking back in the day, 3-4 years ago, tops, if you were a pretty good high school athlete, regardless of the sport, and you're being recruited by various college coaches, you would have to say, sit there with the coach and with your parents and say, okay, what exactly are you going to offer me to come play for your school in terms of scholarship money and so on and so forth? Now, that's the first question. The second question is, coach, tell my family about your NIL program. What can I expect if I decide to go to your school? That's going to be a basic question now, and the coach better be prepared to really speak to that and just not say things like, well, we'll see how it works out, or, you know, we're excited. You got to have some specific numbers. Otherwise, the kid's going to say, well, I'm only getting numbers from the college, you know, down the road. So it's changing all this. And to your point, if the coach now realizes that they're going to have to basically change their persona so kids they're having so much fun playing for State University that they don't want to even think about transferring someplace else. And it's really becoming, as you know, it's becoming more and more of a free agent negotiation between the high school athlete and the coach. And the kid has to basically, with their parents or their family attorney or agent, decide what's the best fit, knowing full well if things don't work out, hey, I'll spend a year there and go to the transfer portal, go someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
Does this sound right to you?
Well, it sounds like that's the right scenario, yeah. Does it sound right in terms of, like, right and wrong?
No, I'm talking about this scenario is this
possible? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
what's funny is that if we look back at the history of college athletics and all these, you know, stories, he got game and blue chips, there's always this sinister element of, oh, no, the athlete is asking for money.
Yeah.
Right? But keep in mind that these things really were never against the law. They were just against the NCAA rules that were made up by the schools and the NCAA together to protect the fact that they were benefiting off of student athletes for free. And I know, yes, they get tuition. That's a ton of money. They get room and board. They did very well, right? But the fact of the matter is, when the money exploded because of television and because of, honestly, think about it, it's because of gambling.
Well, that's something.
That's why the NCAA tournament's so popular. You had to pay these guys. And it's like, it's so funny because it's the only place where, wait, I want to make what I'm worth. And somehow that has a negative connotation because we've been so conditioned to think of student athletes as amateurs. You can't pay them. But that's just something that the schools and the NCAA made up.
Let me ask you about that, because this doesn't get much traction in the world of sports wagering. Have you heard or have you seen or are there any reports? Because I haven't seen any that perhaps with all these student college athletes making all this money now from NIL, have you heard anything about any of these athletes getting in trouble with with gambling or over-wagering? I mean, I just haven't seen much about that. Have you heard? Is this a concern, or is this basically something that is sort of hidden from the public?
Yeah, I haven't heard a specific story yet, but I got news for you. That story's coming.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
I believe that story's coming. Because when there's money flying around, there's people coming out of the shadows to see, hey, buddy, let me see how I can invest that. Let me see. Actually, I got another idea, and the next step is going to be some kid makes a bad choice with a big amount of money. Because I think what's being lost in the shuffle of all this is that there's become an attitude of, if it makes you money, then it is inherently good. Right?
Yeah.
And I understand that money's very important and people like making money. But the bottom line is that, why do you play the game? That can't be lost. Once you get your NIL deal, once you get to your right school, the idea of competition still needs to remain pure. And I believe that there's a big story coming about gambling in the next 5 years. I guarantee that'll happen, because when the money gets too big, people start making mistakes.
I 100% agree with you, and I do fear that's going to happen, because, as you said, money, a lot of money, unfortunately, sometimes has a way of changing people's perspective, their sense of right or wrong, their equilibrium, and in some cases, people have a gambling problem, which is a real medical condition. But, you know, and again, I don't know, you think college coaches are sitting down with kids and saying, you know, I know you guys are making a lot of money on the side. You understand you can't gamble. You should not be gambling. And the kid might say, well, coach, I'm putting some money down. I'm wagering on our team to win. What's wrong with that? And you know, you can see these things begin to just sort of go sideways and just go haywire. That is a concern. And the other thing, Noah, there's nobody, as we said, this is the wild, wild west. There's nobody enforcing this. I know a lot of colleges now are putting down ground rules about NIL deals and so on and so forth. But for the most part, nobody is sort of looking to get this taken away. It's just, it's a gold rush. It's everybody wants to get wealthy.
Yeah, and there's no incentive to really regulate any of this, right?
No.
Because the more popular the top teams are, the more eyeballs, the more the money flows in, right? So it actually only incentivized for like the lower level schools that nobody's really tuning in to see anyway, right? Until the NCAA tournament. So if you think about it, it's like, hey, more popular, better players, great. It's good for everybody.
Yep. And I as I said, I am concerned what's going to happen, as we both feel, with this kind of money that's raining from the sky. At some point, there are going to be, unfortunately, some temptations with gamblers getting into the mix. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out and what happens, and you know, who then basically steps in to enforce this and say, well, this top player was basically gambling on the game. What do we do here? Because the NCAA is every passing day, they become less and less of a factor in this, and it's going to be up to really, I guess, the colleges or their conferences to step in and do something. It's just being in like a car that keeps going faster and faster, and at some point you got to say, well, we got to put some brakes on this thing. But you know, I got to tell you, I read an article the other day about a dad who was like a so-so basketball player in high school, and he's raising 9-year-old boys who are very talented as 9-year-old basketball players. But he's basically sort of traveling these kids around the country to various tournaments for 9-year-olds. To showcase these kids, so that in the hope that he'll get some NIL deals for his kids, and that scares me as well. I mean, they're 9 years old, and it's just the father is about 5'10". As I said, he was a so-so basketball player, so the kids probably aren't going to be really tall. Stuff scares me. It really is wild, wild west in every way. Hey Noah, I could talk to you about this stuff for a long, long time, but I do think that the issues you brought up and the repercussions, the complications of all with NIL and the transfer portal, I really think this is really just fascinating. And we're all living through this right now to see what takes place. I'm going to thank you again, Noah, for taking the time this morning. You know, I really think you really added a real fresh and inside look at all this stuff. And again, that's what you do. You always provide a different and provocative look at sports. So always good to talk to you. Noah, my thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you. And, Frogs, that's going to do it for me and this edition of the Sports Edge. As I said, I think we've covered some pretty fascinating topics here, and bringing on Noah Savage, who's in this, watching this on a day-by-day basis, he's giving you a very candid account of how college sports, even high school athletics, and how they're going to be recruited, how this is all going to change in the very near future. It's already happening. You heard what I said about all these deals that are going down for, quite frankly, in some cases, millions of dollars. Millions of dollars to kids. Oh, unbelievable. Maybe I'm just jealous. Okay. Again, that's going to do it for me in this week's edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks to Pete Hoffman and to Ed Arzuman. NFL preview is up next. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means. Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.